Coming up on Tech News Today, Master Chief gets personal in Halo 4. Valve might be making a console, and the hackers get hacked. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, March 5th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Get better connected to the people you depend on for success. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com, promo code TNT. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT3. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we take the tech news and say, John Strickland, what do you think of it?
Oh, well, gosh, let me tell you how it works.
It's a good thing we have John Strickland on.
That's right. John Strickland from the HowStuffWorks.com website, host of the Tech Stuff podcast and a few other podcasts as well, and regular here on Tech News Today. Good to have you back, man.
It's good to be back. I just keep getting frozen, though.
Yeah, your video was doing fine, like up until right before the show.
Oh, there we go.
Now you're full motion again.
Right. You're just waiting to have that face freeze.
Full motion Strickland.
Let's start off. Let's get the boring story out of the way fast. Okay, so don't press pause. Don't skip. We're gonna blaze through this, but it's just one of those things we got to tell you about. Senator Charles Schumer has urged the Federal Trade Commission to investigate reports that applications on the Apple and Google mobile systems steal private photos and contacts and post them online without consent. He referred to the reports about the photo bug in iOS, the photo bug in Android. He thinks that these go well beyond what a reasonable user understands himself to be consenting to. Smartphone makers should be required to put in place safety measures to ensure third-party applications are not able to violate a user's personal privacy by stealing photographs or data that the user did not consciously decide to make public. I think he means the updates that Apple and Google have both said they're going to make. Mm-hmm. But better late to the party.
Well, maybe he's just behind on watching Tech News Today. He'll figure it out by next week.
You know, that happens. Yeah, it's all taken care of. A lot of people are like, I'm taking a while to catch up.
Yeah. So this is already kind of resolved. But it's a good platform. Well, like your privacy, right?
I mean, this is kind of like fear and uncertainty and doubt kind of playing out in the right way possible. It turned from, hey, there's something in iOS 5, for example, that allows you to write a program a certain way that can be a little confusing to users. You might want to change the wording of permissions to, they're stealing your private photos and they're posting them on the internet for anyone to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not what's happening.
John, do you have any disagreements? Do you think that Mr. Schumer is, I don't know. What do you think?
Gosh, Tom, that was a great question. I'd like to answer it in five parts if I might. I mean, clearly his heart's in the right place. He wants, protection for consumers. You can't really argue against that. I always get nervous whenever anyone involved in government tries to legislate this type of stuff when they don't fully understand the technology behind it, because there's always the capacity to do far more harm than good. And also, these companies are working already to fix these problems. So hopefully what can happen from here is the companies are going to come back and say, you're completely right. We're going to change things. This is what we're doing. Here's our plan in place. We're addressing all the points you have in mind. Please don't start passing laws that are going to make it impossible for us to do business.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, software is going to be buggy, and companies are going to try to violate your privacy. What happens when too many people like Senator Schumer raise the alarm is we get used to it. And when there really is a very bad privacy violation happening, we won't pay attention because we'll be tired of it as a society, not as individuals, but we'll just be like, oh yeah, they're violating our privacy all the time. Everybody's always talking about how this is the most horrible thing ever. I remember that photo thing with Apple and Google. That didn't turn out to be anything bad. This one probably won't be easier. It's somewhat irresponsible, in my opinion, to be crying wolf like this over something that is bad, should have been addressed, and has been. As far as we know. Now, granted, they haven't issued the patch from Apple yet. We'll have to wait and see if that patch gets instituted. But I don't think we need the FTC investigating in this case. That's the way I think.
I agree with
you. Let's move on to something more fun. Halo 4. Woo-hoo! At the Xbox Spring Showcase, Microsoft has released details about the winter launch of the new video game starring Master Chief Petty Officer John 117. He's got a new enemy. They won't say anything about the new enemy, just that it's very ancient and very dark. A lot of folks are thinking it's possibly the Forerunners, but they're not saying. Master Chief also gets a new look, updated, really more detail-oriented look. The game's going to have a character-driven storyline centered on Master Chief and his personal life. Kind of books he reads.
Yeah.
And he likes his long,
childhood trauma.
Long walks, you know, through.
Any food allergies he might have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legumes.
And don't forget, 343 Industries has taken over the direction of Halo for the first time entirely, with no input from Bungie, the folks who used to make it. 343 Industries is a Microsoft group. Josh Holmes is the creative director. But John, a lot of folks from Bungie kind of have come over to 343 Industries, right?
Yeah, that's right. Frank O'Connor, who's the franchise director, was a Bungie employee before he started working on 343. So a lot of the same team are in place as were for the older Halo games. So it's not like it's an entirely new company coming out and just taking over the intellectual property and they're going to mess with it. I'm interested to see some of the other features that were talked about. We really know very little at this point because only a few details have come out. But one of those was that they were going to tie multiplayer in and explain why the Reds are always fighting the Blues. Because whenever you have a multiplayer team versus team, those are the two colors that pop up. It's red versus blue, which I thought was interesting because there's an entire series called Red versus Blue from Rooster Teeth, which I think has explained that entire mythology well.
Do you think they consulted Rooster Teeth when they made the multiplayer single player tie-in?
Gosh, I sure hope so. I actually interviewed Bernie Burns of Rooster Teeth not too long ago for Tech Stuff, and I did not know anything about Halo 4 at the time of the interview, so I wasn't able to ask him then, although I'm pretty sure he probably could have talked about it even if he had anything to share.
Yeah, they've kept this pretty close under wraps, and they still are. We don't know all the details of the characters, like the new enemy. I kind of think that the Forerunners is a good call. They're trying to say it's someone that Master Chief has never confronted before. It's someone we don't know anything about, and we do know some stuff about the Forerunners.
I think I'm more curious about how this is going to push the Xbox 360 further. I mean, this is Halo. That was the game that kind of launched the original Xbox that made it a real hit. You know, the Xbox 360 is really, really getting old. I'm just kind of curious what kind of things they can do to push the limits of what you can do with that, because the screenshots look great. Everything looks it almost looks like something on a PC. Well, that's a stretch. A low-end PC. And so I'm very intrigued by the multiplayer. Can the Xbox 360 handle all of that processing at one time?
And the folks at 343 have said that this is supposedly going to be a game series that, assuming it does well, should stretch in for another decade for this particular storyline that's going to be beginning with Halo 4, which suggests to me that this will also become one of the flagship titles for the next iteration of the Xbox.
Game Developers Conference is kicking off in San Francisco today, and in advance of that, some rumors being bandied about that Valve might come out with a Steam-based console, or at least a Steam-based console platform. Last Friday, Josh Topolsky from The Verge reported that sources were telling him that Valve is developing a hardware platform and may release details at the Game Developers Conference, or they may wait until E3 to release them. We're not sure. It would be a hardware spec and associated software, which would then make up the backbone of what they're calling a Steam box, at least in the rumors they're calling it that. The actual devices would be made by partners. So Steam would be doing what Google's doing with Android for gaming, saying we're gonna make a platform that you can build to and spec to, but we'll provide the software. There's a rumor that the Alienware X51 may have actually been designed with that spec in mind. The Steam box specs, according to Topolsky's sources, are a Core i7 CPU, 8 gigs of RAM, an NVIDIA GPU, and the devices would be able to run any standard PC titles and also allow for rival gaming services like Origin to be loaded up. USB controllers would work, and it might ship with a proprietary controller. And in fact, if you look through patents a lot, you may have seen that Valve patented a controller of their own, so it could be something like that.
With specs like that, Why couldn't it just be a PC that was good for gaming but also gave you other things rather than being limited to gaming only? It was really cheap.
I would think the thing is, I mean, people will hook up PCs to televisions, and that's somewhat an easy thing for geeks to do. But if you want to have, if you want to reach everybody, you kind of have to kind of position it as a set-top box. I mean, the Xbox, the original one, was pretty much a PC. That's what I think is strange about this. People are like, oh, a PC hooking up to your television. It's like, yeah, they did that already. It was called the Xbox. It was a direct Xbox. So this isn't so crazy. It's just more of a positioning kind of concept. And that Alienware X51 was a really interesting concept from, well, Dell. It was for Alienware to have a small PC, something a little larger than the Xbox 360, a little larger than the PS3 even. That was pretty impressive what they put in that device. So if they can get that kind of thing to the masses and it's quiet, I mean, that's another big thing that you want in your set-top box. Hooking up a PC can be really noisy, especially if you want to play some really hardcore games. That's what makes me kind of nervous about this whole Steam Box concept. You know, graphics cards kind of, you kind of need to keep buying them to get like the best frame rates out of your games. Isn't that going to just kind of seem like a low-end version when you're hooking up this PC to your television?
Well, but that's no different than a console either, right? Basically, what Steam's saying is we're going to create a platform that has the openness and flexibility of the PC platform, but the consistency of the console platform. Because the advantage to consoles is I always know what specs I'm developing for. When I develop for PCs, people have all ranges of devices. So what Steam's trying to do, in my opinion, is say, let's try to kind of come up with a good average for PC gaming that everybody can develop for, and that way we can have a decent life cycle with, you know, maybe changes coming every 3 to 4 years, like a little faster than a console, actually. And that way we'll be able to be ahead of the game on performance, but we'll have that openness that the PC platform has. In fact, there have been some quotes from Valve in the past saying they think Apple is the worst offender in leading to a closed environment for gaming, and they want to fight against that.
Do you think the games itself would have, like, I guess, a console mode versus just hampering all the games? Because, I mean, a lot of the games want to just push the limits. What do you think the games would just kind of go, well, we're just going to write to this box and we're not going to try to keep pushing?
Well, I don't think it's that simple. I mean, I think you basically, when you're writing a PC game, you're having to target some kind of hardware. Mm-hmm. So what Steam's trying to do is say, hey, target this kind of hardware, unless you want to just target the best and brightest that's possibly out there. But, you know, write to this kind of hardware, and that way you'll have a wide availability of platform to choose. I mean, this was an argument that was probably originated back when everybody thought PC gaming was dying. And it's been revived by Steam. And I think Steam is actually saying, all right, the next step to reviving it is not just consistency of software installation, but consistency of platform.
But why bother with the console instead of like the OnLive model? I mean, why not just offload it entirely? OnLive's got a pretty good system. You just get a little box. Everything's done in the cloud. You don't have to worry about upgrading anything. Why is this the right time to introduce?
Well, some people complain that OnLive has a bit of a laggy experience depending on how you're accessing it. So,
and frankly, as a console player, I really like having the option of being able to play my games without a persistent internet connection. So anything that would require streaming constantly would be a little bit of a downer for me. I do remember seeing on CNET that Dan Ackerman had mentioned that he was worried that this may just fizzle out because it'd be like the Phantom console.
Which was a Phantom?
Yes, but that was a big difference, right? The Phantom console was from a new player on the scene. In fact, it ended up looking like it was more like a pump and dump scheme. That the guy, I think it was Timothy Roberts, who was the CEO of the company at the time, had actually started selling off shares of his own shares in the company without telling people, which was a big no-no. So it looked like that might have been just kind of a bait and switch from the very beginning. I'm pretty sure that Valve is very sincere behind this, so I wouldn't say that this is going to be akin to the Phantom. My question is, can it really compete against the Xbox and the PS out there? I mean, it could if they can get a jump on the next generation of the consoles, because both of those are starting to show their age. But if it's not fast, they may just be an also-ran.
Yeah, it's definitely not a sure bet. I don't look at this and say, like, oh, why hasn't anybody done this? Like, this is a sure thing. But I think it's a good bet. It may or may not succeed, but I think I have often thought, especially since the first Xbox came out, like, why doesn't somebody just come out with a PC that's built specifically for gaming but works like a console, so that the people who don't want to constantly build super machines can just buy something but take advantage of the fact that you don't have to be a developer. You don't have to have an agreement with Sony or Microsoft or Nintendo. You can just develop a game and sell it, and there's a console out there that will play it. That's the one thing we don't have. We have this PC platform that's inconsistent, and we have consoles. And Valve's saying, hey, maybe if we bridge that gap, the best of both worlds will pay off.
And one of the big fears about hooking a PC at all to a television is the, well, lack of reliability. I mean, a lot of set-top boxes use dumbed-down operating systems that just don't crash. I mean, that's it's rare that people have to restart certain boxes. And when you're talking about a gaming machine, if the operating systems, I guess this would have to be built on Windows 7, wouldn't it?
Well, not necessarily. It could be built on Linux.
Okay, if they build it on Linux, and they can strip it down to the point where it's really rock steady. I mean, that's the thing that people like about consoles.
Well, and that, I think that's what Steam's after here, is like, we're going to provide that software platform. We'll see. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, GoToMeeting. We develop trust in the people we know, but we don't really know someone we can't see. It's hard to connect. You can't look them in the eye. You can't see their nonverbals. You can't give them your nonverbals. So that's why we recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix. A simple online meeting service with group HD video helps you get better connected with the people you depend on for success. So with GoToMeeting, it just takes a webcam and a click, and you collaborate. A group with HD video. You can see attendees eye to eye while collaborating on documents in real time. Helps build trust, confidence, makes meetings more effective. And GoToMeeting is so easy to set up and use. That video quality is so clear and natural. It's like being in the same room. Available for your Mac or your PC. You can use GoToMeeting for product reviews, for demos, for sales presentations, training sessions, anything where you need to look people in the eye, but you don't want to travel. You don't want to fly all over the place. And it's all right from your desk. Start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting, free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. That's GoToMeeting.com. Click on that Try It Free button and enter the promo code TNT. You'll see what we're talking about. Literally, you'll see it. HD Faces by Citrix. GoToMeeting.com. Use that promo code TNT. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Back to the news. And we have some hard-hitting news here. First of all, speaking to Tech Radar, Asus VP Benson Lin said Asus is very close to Google. This is a quote. Very close to Google. So once they have Android 5.0, I think there will be a high possibility that we will be the first wave to offer the Jelly Bean update. So it's called Jelly Bean. Google hasn't confirmed it, but everybody knows.
This guy from Asus said it, so it must be true.
Yeah, and I have some Jelly Beans.
And that's
those are Google Jelly Beans, aren't they?
That's an approximation of the OS. You can see it right there.
It's not going to get you upgraded any faster. You know that, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is it that every time I'm on this show, we're talking about the next version of Android, and every time I'm on the show, you guys have snacks in the studio?
Oh, yeah, you're on for the ice cream sandwich bit, too. Yeah.
Yes.
I blame Google.
This is really upsetting me. And, you know, considering what the rumored name of Android 6.0 is, I'm so glad that I have a frozen one in the basement.
Chris Ziegler of The Verge reports that the same sources that tipped off The Verge about the name Jelly Bean say the next version of Android will be called Key Lime Pie. And I've got key lime truffles
What is going on here?
That's not a pie.
In the coat. Where's Android 7.0?
I've got a key lime pie in my coat.
Barrett!
Do you have a layer cake for Android 7?
Or is it lollipop?
Lollipop.
Lemon drop. I think lemon drop is the answer for 7. Why are people talking about
this? Pie, cake would be really nice. It starts to sound really silly after a while, doesn't it? But there is something, I guess, and I guess Google's smart enough to know that it's more fun to think about what will be the next alphabetical suite version of an operating system rather than just
operating system 7.2. I mean, I wonder if Google really kind of thought that much about it in the beginning. Like, they just kind of gave it a thing. It happened to be a dessert, you know, when they were first working on it. And then the next one, oh, well, let's name that a dessert, too. Or did they really actually think about the fact that, you know, there are people out there and large amounts of people that will wax poetically for hours about what the next few versions are actually going to be?
And they do.
And they do. Exactly.
As silly as this seems.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I wax poetic about as many hours as I do waiting for the next version of Android to finally make its way to my phone.
Yeah, that's the point right. I wanted to make, Jonathan. It's like, shouldn't the focus really be on ice cream sandwich and its adoption on phones and mm-hmm. devices?
Or,
and yes, there's no ice cream
sandwich. Thereof.
Yeah, so instead of bothering that, oh, yeah, it's great. You know, 6.0 be called this and 5.0 is that. Where is the current version on every device? And I mean, it's good to know that Google's developing operating system upgrades. I mean, we know that's going
to
happen.
Google has said, look, we understand that that's frustrating, and we're going to try to get on a regular schedule and work with manufacturers so they know when to expect the updates, mm-hmm. and we'll get a rhythm going. And ice cream sandwich is the first of that rhythm. So it doesn't feel like they have a rhythm yet because this is the first time through the cycle. But the cycle is going to start repeating, and then it's going to feel normal. Google I.O. is when they announce what it is. The fall is when the first couple machines get it. And then by spring, most of the machines have the update. We're not quite to spring yet. So we're not to that point where ice cream sandwich is everywhere. I think by summer, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, ice cream sandwich is on pretty much everything that's newer. By the time Jelly Bean goes through this cycle next summer, it's going to feel like, okay, this is a pretty regular thing. At least that's what Google hopes.
Mm-hmm. I think the big question here is... when they run out of letters, so they reach the letter Z sometime in 2030, I believe. Mm-hmm. What will they name the version in 2031?
Aardvark.
Come on. Oh, are they going to start with animals?
Anything that starts with two.
Double A.
Yeah, double A. Then you got to start with
what kind of dessert is Aardvark?
BB edit.
BB gun. BB gun.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
BB edit. That's
hey, why not?
All right, a couple more stories to get to. The hackers got hacked.
Yeah, Symantec's reporting that a tool used by members of Anonymous and its supporters called Slow Loris actually had a Trojan within it. Now, Slow Loris is used to take down sites using denial of service. Symantec says that somebody altered a pastebin guide after the January 20th mega upload raids and included a download link to a Trojanized version of the Slow Loris tool. Now, the tool still did the denial of service thing, so people didn't notice that right away, but it included Zeus. Now, I think it's Zeus. People are saying it might be Zeus.
People aren't saying that. I'm the one who said I thought I heard somebody call it Zeus.
It doesn't
once.
Matter what it's called. Yeah. But the thing is, what
Zeus
it did,
makes more sense.
What Zeus did was it collected banking and email credentials as well as cookies and sent it back out. So the guide that was altered is sometimes called the tools of the DDoS trade. So this was often copied, including this link to the Trojanized version of Slow Loris. And Symantec says the doc was viewed over 26,000 times and was often linked on Twitter.
I think there's going to be folks who are not sympathetic to Anonymous out there that are going to be chuckling up their sleeves at the idea that Anonymous is getting treated the way Anonymous is sometimes seen to treat others. But the more rational point of view is to look at this and say, wow, this is not good. This is an unhealthy environment that we're creating where everybody's hacking everybody else. It starts to feel like not Wild West, but anarchy. Well, not and that's, anarchy well, in the good way.
Yeah, I think
Mad Max. Yeah, Mad
yeah,
Max.
That kind of and not the anarchy where like everybody just does what they want to and it all works out in the end, which is the political theory. But the sort of Mad Max, like everybody's trying to kill each other, anarchy.
Well, the whole thing, you know, Anonymous. The premise behind a lot of what Anonymous is doing is because they are sort of speaking for the masses against people who are doing bad things. Mm-hmm. You know, they're bad business practices, that sort of thing. So then when somebody or a group comes along and turns the tables, at least is what it seems like is going on with this vigilante group, then you're reminded that just because a group decides to go after, let's say, a corporation, doesn't mean that they're the only ones who have these tools.
Right.
Now there's another group who then can go back to the first group. And yeah, not only is it messy, but it's a toxic environment. It's very negative. It starts feeling like a waste of time because then it's a lot of mudslinging.
Well, maybe some good will come in this. Maybe Anonymous will try to help out pastebin so they don't get attacked. Because that's what happened. If that edit doesn't happen, this right. doesn't happen. So I don't know if they're going to somehow magically offer tech support to pastebin because that's where a lot of this stuff goes. Mm-hmm. If that's hackable, that's a problem.
Now, you're Anon News, a Twitter account that occasionally will speak for Anonymous or on behalf of Anonymous, says the post from Symantec was wrong and they called it libelous. They said they never posted the DDoS hijacker, nor did we attempt to trick people. Instead, we warned of it, says Symantec. Also, they say to Symantec. Also at Symantec, maybe if you paid attention to more details and did proper due diligence, your source code wouldn't have been stolen. So they're getting nasty. You can't keep your source code together either. That could be why, you know, people could suspect Symantec of nefarious motivations in accusing Anonymous of getting hacked, because Symantec itself has been hacked in a very embarrassing way. So then it becomes just more of a he said, she said situation.
And beyond that, I mean, we shouldn't just immediately assume that the hackers that targeted Anonymous were doing so through any political means. It may very well have just been an attack of opportunity. You're looking at a population of people who are very willing to download software in order to take action against an established entity. So these are people who are going to go to places that are not necessarily the most reputable distributors of software. They're willing to take that risk. So you've already got people who are going to be vulnerable to that sort of thing. You've got a lot of them. I mean, it may very well just be someone saying, this is a way we can reap in a lot of cash really quickly, and they don't really care about the political undertones or overtones or anything.
Exactly. And you know, there's going to be a lot of name calling and Sturm und Drang around this. But in the end, whether you're Symantec, whether you're Anonymous, a member of Anonymous, or just a plain old user out, you know, caught in the middle of it all, be careful what you download. Be careful, you know, what you execute on the internet. Don't just click on things. That, you know, that's really the ultimate point.
Common sense.
Yeah. Finally, Yahoo rumored to be up for some major restructuring.
Yeah. All Things D is reporting, says multiple sources from within Yahoo are claiming new CEO Scott Thompson, he's been CEO since just after the first of this year, is preparing layoffs in the thousands as part of a huge company restructuring that could at least begin as soon as the end of this month. Would affect potentially many different departments, PR and marketing, research, marginal businesses. Recently, Thompson hired a consulting group called Boston Consulting Group to help him and the company as a whole focus where it can grow and where it should cut. Kara Swisher over at All Things D reported yesterday that Yahoo Labs head Prabhavar Raghavan is leaving Yahoo to go to Google. Her sources say impending major job cuts in his research unit influenced his exit. What's interesting is you think, okay, well, thousands of people getting cut from Yahoo, what is that going to mean for the company as a whole? Right now, Yahoo claims just over 14,000 employees in its most recent quarterly report. That is actually up from 13,600 at the end of December in 2008, which is just less than a month before Carol Bartz became CEO.
So they added employees while Carol Bartz was CEO?
They did, although Carol Bartz also oversaw quite a few layoffs during her tenure.
Yeah, I know.
So it's kind of like, well, what's going on here? It's hard to know exactly how, you know, downsizing and growth ended up with more employees now than they had a few years ago. Sources also say, though, that there are more people working at Yahoo that aren't even being counted because they're software contractors and their costs are going through capital expenditures and things like that. So in many cases, people are obviously worried. People say Scott Thompson is really, he's really trying to make a big change. We got to get these different departments from within Yahoo either to get profitable quick or trim the fat to the point where they can be profitable in the future, and a lot of people are going to lose their jobs.
Layoffs don't always mean forced reductions. A lot of times a company lays people off because it's a section of the business that isn't as necessary. For instance, the Blizzard layoffs recently. Mm-hmm. 600 people, almost entirely from customer service, because they say they've automated so many customer service parts of the business that they don't need that section. I don't think that's so much a cost reduction as an efficiency thing, saying, you know, it just doesn't make sense to pay all these people. We don't have enough for them to do. So that could explain why Carol Bartz laid off a lot of people, but you end up with more employees because they lay off people from certain businesses that they don't want to be in anymore. But then they end up hiring a bunch of people for other businesses that they're expanding into. And I think what Scott Thompson is realizing is we need to focus on what we're doing well and cut a lot of fat here. The question is, will he then go and staff up in a bunch of areas that don't work? Or will he be able to finally be the one at Yahoo to come in and say, this is what we are. This is what we do. I'm going to concentrate the peanut butter in the center of the sandwich, and we're going to move forward and make Yahoo successful.
Well, again. And apparently he's still got quite a few questions about what it is they do and who they are, because they have to have Boston Consulting Group help them figure that out. And this is...
Red Sox fans, that's what they're going to tell
you. You can't fault Scott Thompson for not making some waves. He has only been CEO for a couple months. Already, he's gotten quite a bit of heat for the controversial move of threatening Facebook with patent lawsuits, not only from the Silicon Valley kind of mind at large, but reportedly a lot of criticism from within the company. The talks between Yahoo and Alibaba Group and Japan SoftBank over Yahoo stakes in both Alibaba and Yahoo Japan are now paused. They could resume, but they had been going on for a while. That's not happening anymore. Five members of Yahoo's board are rotating out. We've got some vocal shareholders. One in particular, Daniel Loeb, has a 6% stake in Yahoo. He wants to get on the board, and he has some ideas of who else should be on the board. And he's powerful enough so that Yahoo can't just ignore him completely. They kind of have to figure out how to work with him. He makes a lot of noise online. But then let's also remember that Thompson was formerly the president of eBay's PayPal unit, and he has a really good track record there. Doubled their revenue, successfully brought up the user base to more than 100 million.
And talk about a company with focus. You know what PayPal does.
Exactly.
So the question is there a thing that Yahoo does that Scott can figure out and then, you know, communicate within the organization as well as outside?
I wish I could say, yeah. I believe in it. I just it's been such a weird story for the last few years.
Yeah, Yahoo refocusing over and over just makes me think, and Ayaz, you're going to appreciate this. It makes me think of whenever the DC universe has to reboot everything so that continuity is reestablished.
Yeah, actually, they could probably use like an Infinity Crisis kind of thing. They
really, Yahoo 2.
Yeah, or just say like just start renumbering.
Or Carol Bartz is still CEO.
They just need to change their IP address. Just start it at 1 and they'll be fine.
Yeah.
Or 0.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to the news views. AMD's out of the chip building business, selling off their remaining stake in Global Foundries, the company they spun off back in 2009. At one point, Global Foundries was the exclusive manufacturer of AMD chips. AMD has since partnered with companies like TSMC because Global Foundries had difficulty producing 32 nanometer chips. The terms of the deal say AMD will continue to work with the company in the future, but AMD is focusing on chip design now.
According to game development tool maker Spaceport.io, HTML5 games run 3 times faster on iOS than on Android. The company created a benchmark called PerfMerks that measured the ability to animate image movement and pitted the iPhone 4S up against the Samsung Galaxy Nexus. Spaceport.io also found that Android 4.0 performed much better than Android 3.0 and older versions in running HTML5 games. Not a huge surprise there.
Facebook Messenger for Windows is now available to some via Facebook. You may not see a download link right away, but the app will be available to all in the coming weeks. The desktop app does not have a video chat or group chat like the web version does, but it does include a notification inbox and a news ticker. A Mac version is planned, but there's no release date for that yet.
Square launched a new iPad app called Register that is aimed at being more capable to handle high volumes of sales and track analytics better than Square's first iPad app, which had Register functions. The app works with both the Square dongle and card case. Square also announced that it's on track to process $4 billion worth of sales, which is double what it processed in the fourth quarter of 2011.
Oh. We were talking about the Wild West of the internet earlier, so this is kind of how security works in this Wild West. Over the weekend, developer Igor Holmakov exploited a known vulnerability in Ruby on Rails that allowed him to gain administrator access to GitHub, meaning that he could do whatever he wanted to all GitHub projects, including Ruby on Rails itself, Linux, millions of others. All he did with his powers was post a funny comment, so it doesn't seem like it was all that malicious, but GitHub did end up suspending his account, fixed the hole, and then after reviewing his activity, reinstated him.
The entire internet is cheering and throwing ticker tape parades over Apple's App Store reaching its 25th billion download over the weekend. Yeah, very exciting. And by the entire internet, we mean one Chinese guy. Apple has awarded Chun-Li Fu of Qingdao, China, a $10,000 iTunes gift card for downloading the app that put the marketplace over the top. Fu downloaded Where's My Water free, a Disney game.
Well, he downloaded a free game and got $10,000. Nice.
Good deal.
Do you think you have to choose between downloading games or some streaming technology like OnLive? Well, DARPA says you're wrong, and they invented the internet, so you have to listen to them. Numicent is rolling out a DARPA-derived cloud paging technology today. Rafe Needleman at CNET reports that, among other things, it will let you play big games over the web more quickly than if you had to download them, and with better performance than if you're streaming them. Numacent is a virtual machine technology, but instead of downloading the whole virtual machine, it uses a network-based virtual memory manager that grabs just the parts of the VM it needs over the web.
CDNet Korea previously reported that the Samsung Galaxy S3 is on track for an April launch. Not so fast, says Samsung on their Korean language Twitter feed. In Korean, they deny that an April release has been set in stone for the Galaxy S3 and promise to post to Twitter, presumably in Korean, when the actual launch date is determined.
Everybody hates pre-roll ads that make you sit through commercials before your video plays.
Get off the stage.
But advertisers almost always insist on them so viewers can get that message. What's the solution? Solve Media will let you skip pre-roll commercials by typing a branding message into a text box. In their example, you can skip an ad for Toyota's RAV4 by typing in...
Oh, it's not for the RAV4. It's for the Camry.
For the Camry, excuse me. By typing in, quote, the reinvented 2012 Camry. That's pretty long. As long as you can type faster than the ad plays. So yeah, good luck with that.
All things D, Peter Kafka reported it was the RAV4, and then I went and looked at it and forgot to change it to the Camry when I wrote that down, so that's my fault. But I could not type the reinvented 2012 Camry faster than the ad played.
Hopefully.
I tried.
You just use two fingers, Tom. That's how you type. It's just with the two fingers.
Well, yeah, that's how I type.
Can you cut and paste?
Huh?
Can you cut and paste the phrase?
You know, I could in advance. I couldn't cut it out, but I guess next time, like the second time I go back.
Yeah, you just have to keep a doc.
Yeah, keep
a doc on your computer of all of the things that you might have to type in.
Uh-huh.
Then you just have to scan it for the phrase, copy and paste it.
Totally
worth the effort.
Now, this could just be, you know, bug, but when I tried the demo and I put in the correct phrase, it didn't, like, play the video. It just stopped.
Oh, no.
So, who knows?
Great.
Let's check the randomizer. What's in there?
Let me dig in.
Oh, the randomizer is in there. This was a big hit on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. The human heart has been replaced in everyone. Oh, wait, maybe I'm reading that wrong. I think it's just a technology being developed. Human hearts replaced by a 10,000 RPM artificial pump with no pulse. This is detailed in a story from Popular Science. We saw it on The Verge. Doctors Bud Frazier and Billy Cohn devised the artificial organ, and it can completely replace the heart and provide continuous flow of blood, or mud, if you're Anheuser-Busch, throughout a body without recreating the pulse. While the pulse produced by a creature's heart is an indicator of life and death, it's been tricky to replicate, so they just did away with it. It's like continuous variable transmission for your blood.
This is pretty cool. Watching the video and seeing the various folks that have had this, there's like one guy who's had this procedure done, and then of course they did a lot of animal testing too. To think that they've proven that the pulse is not necessary as far as all of our other functions go, that you can function fine with a continuous flow, and no one was really sure about that when they first started.
Does this mean this guy can beat, like, lie detectors and things? Because he doesn't have a pulse?
Because they can't check his heartbeat.
Right, there's nothing to go on with this guy.
If you want to go into a life of crime, this is definitely...
This is a surgery for you.
Yeah.
I feel that I should point out right now...
Surgery.
Since I know how polygraphs work, I feel I should point out that a polygraph can't tell when you're lying anyway.
Right, right. Thank you for bringing some rationality.
I can't not say that.
At least 50 calves, that's cow calves, and 3 human beings are alive with no pulse in their bodies right now thanks to that artificial pump.
Wouldn't you, this is all very cool and fine. Wouldn't you miss your pulse if you didn't have it anymore? Plus, I check my pulse at the gym all the time.
Well, and plus, when you're working out, like, am I getting a good workout? I have no idea. I have to check the RPMs of my blood. How do you do that?
I don't know.
I'm just wondering if all these cows walking around with no pulse are just going to, you know, go bonkers and start attacking the Green Bay Packers or something. This is a zombie movie made to happen right here.
Plus, could fake your own death.
I would put little stickers like on my carotid artery and both my wrists and inside of my thighs saying, I don't have a pulse does not mean I'm dead. You know?
Don't check me for a pulse.
Yeah.
Hold the mirror up to my face first.
Because emergency procedures, the very first thing you always do is you check the pulse. And if they don't have a pulse,
maybe just tattoos on both wrists.
You start doing
not
CPR.
Dead, pulse free.
Pulse free. I'm pulse free. I've gone pulse free.
The number of times I've been unnecessarily hit by a defibrillator is just insane.
All right. Real quick before we get to the calendar, I want to thank our other sponsor for today's show, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high quality website or blog. Squarespace for years has been doing this. They're amazing at it. Easy to use UI. I use them. I'll be using them this evening on Sword and Laser. We'll record an episode. I'll put in the show notes in Squarespace. I'll just paste in this big, horrible, ugly blotch of text. And within 10 minutes, I will have turned it into a decent looking, easy to read show notes, thanks to the ease of Squarespace. You've got all new template designs in there as well, 13 new ones, 85 new style options, 2 brand new templates. Check it out. You've got to try it. And you can import your current blog. And if you're like, I don't want to put my log in there, what if I can't get it out? You can take it with you too. They believe in data portability, so there's no reason not to try it. The all-inclusive service includes several modules to build your website, imports from Blogger, Movable Type, Typepad, and WordPress, Flickr photo display, Twitter widgets, social media buttons, website tracking, cloud architecture for speed and site stability. Don't have to take my word for it, though. They give you an absolutely free trial. Go to squarespace.com, sign up for the free account. You don't need a credit card or anything. This is a no-risk trial. All you need to do is pick a name. And then you've got that.squarespace.com. You can get a domain name associated with it if you want later on, but you don't have to get started. Use that offer code TNT3 if you do keep the account, though. If you're like, you know what, I do like this, I want to pay for this. 30% off for 3 months when you use the offer code TNT3. Squarespace.com, we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. On to the calendar.
Tomorrow, March 6th, is Mass Effect 3 release day. Very excited about that. On Tuesday, also on the 6th, Pandora is releasing their Q4 and their full fiscal year 2012 results. Stock price is down quite a bit, around 15% since their June IPO price of last year. And there's also, it's some sort of silly, small event that a company called Apple is putting on Wednesday.
Oh, they used to make computers.
10 a.m. Pacific.
They're having a little press conference?
I never heard of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fruit related. I'm not really sure. But we'll be covering it because you just never know. There might be something in there that's of interest to tech folks.
All right.
So there's that. A Sony webcast called PlayStation Vita Game Heaven will reveal unannounced Vita titles, some upcoming releases, Vita services, a lot of information on Sony's Japanese PlayStation website at 3 a.m. Pacific or 7 a.m. Eastern time, or rather 6 a.m. Eastern time, Friday, March 9th. And finally, sad news, Nokia is discontinuing OviShare that allowed automatic uploads to services like Facebook and Flickr. So OviShare web downloads will stop. The ability to upload will stop on March 13th. Then you have until May 30th. And by the way, May has 31 days, so don't think end of May. May 30th.
This is weird, isn't it?
It is sort of weird. They're very specific about it. To log into your account, and then you can download everything. They'll either give it everything to you on a single zip, or you can choose to do various smaller files.
What is it, Commander Worf?
Incoming message.
Oh, thank you. Comes from Rich McAdams, president of Ingenious Consulting Group. He says, guys, love the show. Well, thank you, Rich. In episode 438, you were discussing AT&T's changed throttling plan. Something to consider, if 5% of users who pay the same as the other 95% use 50 to 80% of the data, AT&T might be better off in total by alienating some of those users so much that they leave. If half of them leaves, AT&T loses 2.5% of their revenue, but gains 25 to 40% of their data capacity back to sell to less demanding customers who are then on tiered plans instead of unlimited plans. Sometimes, quote, firing your least profitable customers is a good thing. Now, you could take some issue if, like, losing 2.5% of the users is actually the same as the revenue, because maybe they have higher plans or whatever. But a point is well taken here, which is if someone is damaging your business because of an agreement you made at a different point, that conditions have now changed, it may be useful to kind of encourage them to leave. I don't think that's going to help AT&T, though, because if these, you know, top 5% leave, you're going to get a new top 5%. Bits aren't a scarce resource. So if all of the people that are left, the 95%, are all using the internet at the same time, you're still going to have clogged capacity.
Yeah,
you need money to build out more capacity.
AT&T's problem is an infrastructure problem. They don't have the network that Verizon has. They need to build out, and, you know, getting rid of your customers probably not the best business plan in general.
Especially when you need more money to solve the problem, mm-hmm. not fewer people using the network.
This kind of actually reminds me of whenever any city tries to fix traffic problems by adding more lanes to roads, which just really gets more cars on the roads at the same time anyway, so you don't really solve the problem. Same sort of thing.
Yeah, but John, all you need is 30 lanes. If we just add...
What we need to do is just level all the buildings, pave over it, and drive constantly.
What you need is a continuous supply of Bud from the artificial heart. And then you'll be fine. All your problems will be solved.
All right. Adam Roche in the United Kingdom has an interesting theory on that very obscure Wednesday announcement, the iPad 3 announcement, of course. He says everybody's saying that perhaps Apple will unveil a new Apple TV on Wednesday alongside the iPad 3. I think they might, but I don't think it's going to be what people are expecting. I think Apple may have reimagined the Apple TV. What if that new Apple TV is nothing more than an app on the new iPad that airplays to a new HDMI dongle for your TV? Would that be the simplest method ever? Their accessories have been getting more sophisticated. Let the iPad 3 be the workhorse. Feed to an always-on mini dongle type thing that's plugged into your HDMI 3 slot instead of a set-top box that requires a separate remote and a power unit.
I don't think this has any chance of being true, but it should be.
It's a good idea.
It's a great idea. And it's an incredible idea. Yeah. And I don't think that's what's going to happen either, but what a cool solution.
Doesn't Roku have something like this coming out? They have like a it's an HDMI dongle.
Yeah.
It uses a particular kind of standard. I mean, there's only a couple of TVs that do that right now anyway.
It uses the WMD standard. Oh, wait. I think it's some other acronym.
I don't think that's
it. WD-40 standard, I don't know, something that sounds like modern.
I'm sure it's somewhere in there, but yeah, I mean, isn't that, I guess you could just use the Apple TV like that now, right? That's this dongle, it's just a box that's about the size of a hockey puck.
It's just a really big dongle.
Well, I know in the case of Roku, it's it has to be over Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. and depending on what your setup is, that could be disastrous.
Yeah.
So, Apple's probably not going to do anything like this. And by the way, Adam says, P.S., I'm probably wrong, but at least it's original thinking. And it is.
It is.
Absolutely.
It's
no one's even
brought
that
up before.
I love the
idea, yeah.
A few too many hurdles for this to be an announcement on Wednesday, in my opinion. But it's a really good theory.
A few too many turtles. You're absolutely right. All right, let's wrap up the show. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening and submitting at our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place to go to join almost 5,000 people who submit stories each day and vote them up or down. Do the voting. The voting is what really helps us to decide whether you really want to see that story covered or not. It helps us every day. Thank you, John Strickland, for being on the show. Always good to have you. Let folks know about the stuff you're doing over there at HowStuffWorks.com.
Sure. I'm writing articles for the site, but I'm also the co-host of a technology podcast called Tech Stuff. We've also got a video podcast that will be launching in the near future, so be on the lookout for that. Yeah, we've got some pretty cool stuff. These are like 5-minute long video topics where we take something and kind of break it down in a very goofy way. So if you've ever listened to my show, you know that it's pretty silly, absurdist kind of stuff. But my co-host and I really like that. And if you're going to South by Southwest, on March 12th, my coworkers, Josh and Chuck, the hosts of Stuff You Should Know, which is by far our most popular podcast, they're having a party at Fado on March 12th to unveil clips from the pilot episode of a TV show they shot for the Science Channel. So that's pretty awesome.
Oh, fantastic. Well, definitely go check that out as well. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT@twit.tv.
There we go.
You can't email us at our website, but you have to know the website because it's TNT@twit.tv. And you can give us a call, leave us a voicemail. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number, as long as you can take those letters and turn them into numbers. It's like a little puzzle, plus you get to leave us a message. Do it now. Lauren Good from All Things D joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.